Save big on all your Halloween needs, all in the Kroger app.
Get juicy red, green, or black seedless grapes for 99 cents a pound. Then get tender USDA Choice Boneless Beef Chuck Roast for $4.99 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Kyle, my DHT is extremely high right now. I bet you are jelly.
Not really jelly, but I don't know if you want to have that high of a DHT. There's a lot of things that could go wrong, right?
No, I can't think of a single thing that could go wrong with high DHT.
All right, well, let's see why that DHT is so high and explain a little bit of why that might be the case. Welcome back to Just the Basics. I'm Dr. Kyle Gillette, and today we are talking about transdermal testosterone.
That's right. And transdermal testosterone is any testosterone that you're applying to the skin. So that could be a patch, a gel, a cream. It could be applied scrotally. It could be applied to your partner. Hopefully not, but transference is a risk that we will certainly talk about.
Yeah, unless your doctor prescribes it for you to apply to your partner. Like the study where they rubbed the belly to look for transference.
Yeah. Before we get into fun stories, we'll start with our obligatory meme or graphic of the day.
Yes.
So we've got up here on the screen a Chad doctor. And what's he holding there?
I'm not sure what he's holding, but up at the top it says 1800. So that sounds awfully high. So this looks like a doctor that I would want to go to if I was, say, Chris Bumstead and I was feeling like I had low T.
Interesting. So we'll certainly explore his chart there later on. Mm-hmm. But to start, we'll talk about in sort of the two medicine worlds of traditional and I'll just say functional medicine, sort of a broad catch-all, what sort of testosterone transdermal solutions are being used.
So yeah.
We talk about the transdermal use in the traditional setting. What's the most common thing out there?
That would be Androgel. Good old big pharma does offer some hormone replacement therapies like Androgel, which is a gel that you apply to your skin, often the shoulders, but people have applied it all over the place. I've heard of females trying to apply Androgel. They don't make a female concentration. Mm-hmm. Anyway, that's what a common treatment would be if you saw a urologist. But in functional medicine, they like to do things very differently. And there is a huge bunch of things they do. But they, of course, like to use compounded testosterone gel because they can sell it and mark it up and make money. I mean, because why did they use cream again? I forget.
I've heard the serum levels, you won't ever get those high enough with Androgel.
Hold my beer.
You can make it a 20% concentration instead of a 1 or 1.62% concentration. And then they also will on occasion specifically ask patients to apply this scrotally, whereas that's contraindicated for the Androgel. I believe there's alcohol in the Androgel, mm-hmm. which would probably make that uncomfortable as an application.
I could see that. And by the way, even though we joke about this, we do have patients that we specifically have apply their compounded testosterone cream to the scrotum, usually under-virilized individuals or individuals who have lost for whatever reason, secondary sexual characteristic development. But this is certainly not something that we usually do.
Yeah, there's individualization. We call it individualized medicine because everyone has different goals, needs, medical history. But that's just what you might commonly see if you're talking with your physician, PA or NP, and they're talking to you about testosterone formulations, depending on what medical setting you're in. They may offer you something compounded, something you can go pick up at a big chain pharmacy. And that brings us to our myth of the day. As far as testosterone levels go, there was, I suppose a lot of prominent people have said this, that the level has to be high, has to be at least 800 or 900 nanogram per deciliter to be quote unquote optimal. So I'll call this a myth. And
it's a myth.
What is the truth?
Yeah, the truth is there are many optimal ranges that depend on the androgen sensitivity of the individual and the free androgen index, and what we would consider the total androgen pool, which we've discussed at length in many other podcasts. But basically, the way to think about this is the more strong androgens you have, the less weak and very weak androgens you have, you need. So you just literally don't need as many. One analogy I make with this is if you take three shots of hard alcohol or tequila, then you will feel that effect very easily. But you could have, three shots worth of beer and you might not feel that much because it's much weaker. Same thing. DHT is a much stronger androgen, tequila in the analogy. Testosterone is a much weaker androgen, beer in the analogy.
Go ahead and pull up slide number 5. This will be a great visualizer for people. So this is my extremely basic model. People who are aficionados out there may not completely agree with this. They say, well, no, maybe testosterone has more androgenic activity because of the paracrine conversion. But for very simple purposes, DHT, milligram per milligram, is much more androgenic than testosterone. I think most literature sources would say at least 5 times as androgenic. So I've set that as the threshold for this formula. And you can see how two very different serum levels of testosterone yield very different androgen scores depending on whether you're using an injection or using a transdermal, in this case, like the high end of gel conversion. Some studies will say that gel is only about a 15% conversion, but it's still going to be higher percent-wise than testosterone. So for every 10 nanogram per deciliter of testosterone injected, you might get up to 1 nanogram per deciliter of DHT.
Yep.
For every 10 nanogram per deciliter of transdermal serum that you reach, you're probably going to end up with 1.5 up to maybe even 3.5 nanogram per deciliter of DHT. So the proportions are just very different. And hopefully this chart makes sense to you guys.
Yeah. And we can argue semantics and we can argue nuance. And there is a lot of complications, which we discussed in other podcasts, not the Just the Basics podcast. So if you type out, well, that's not true of the patch because it doesn't make as much DHT. Or if you apply test cream to the scrotum, it's even more DHT than that. This is just the basics. So please see all the other podcasts that we've done that go far too deep into the semantics.
Or leave a question for our Just the Basics AMA at the end, where we will talk about not just the basics, because we do want to address those questions. There's no way we've talked about every specific possible scenario out there, and we would love to at some point. That would be pretty cool.
That comes to our truth, which we already kind of discussed and mentioned, which is the optimal testosterone depends on the individual and the form, like we talked about. We talked about the androgenic score. We also, I guess, didn't mention as much. It depends on what the individual is trying to achieve. So if they're a professional athlete, for example, let's say they compete in World's Strongest Man, then even if they're on a testosterone cream, then the benefits of having a total testosterone of 800 or 900, if not more, still likely outweigh the downsides if all of the health downsides are in check.
Yeah. And as far as an individual, if you're thinking, you know, what's the ideal testosterone level for me? Because everyone's an individual. One thing to keep in mind that hopefully your prescriber knows is the timing of the blood draw matters. We can put up an example here of, let's do slide 7. This happens to be the testosterone patch. So if you're waiting 24 hours after your patch application to check your levels, you're going to kind of expect them to always be low. If you're looking for a peak level, you're probably going to do that about 6 hours after you apply it. So that's something to keep in mind. Some clinics that tend to push the doses higher will purposely or not purposely check a trough level. So let's say you inject your testosterone once a week. They may have you get your blood work right before your next testosterone injection so that the level looks normal on paper. And I don't know if they're doing that intentionally or not intentionally, but it's something for you to be aware of as the patient that, hey, I might actually be getting exposed to more or less testosterone depending on when that blood level is checked.
Yeah, that's a good point. I suppose that brings up the question, what should be standard of care most of the time if you had to pick a transdermal or through the skin testosterone? And what are some of the pros and cons of that?
Yeah, so the standard of care, or at least the study that was carried out, the TRAVERSE study, they did use the androgel, which I didn't understand at the time to be a very steady state 24-hour release. But upon further reading, I looked and I was like, wow, this is actually, if you're a weekend, most of the time it's going to be at the same level. So you wake up, you go to bed with the same testosterone, the same DHT level.
And I find this is actually a positive, but there's a lot of individuals, doctors in the functional health space, that all happen to make money off of prescribing the cream that don't agree with this.
Yeah, and I tend to like that for measurability purposes, like with the injections. It's pretty easy to know. If someone's doing a frequent injection protocol, you can say, hey, this is where your testosterone is. Maybe it's up a little bit higher, a little bit lower. But I would argue that probably the androderm patch or generic patch, whatever it is at this time, if someone really wants to use a transdermal and they don't have the issue of like excessive sweating or they're a swimmer or something where the patch is just not going to work for them, they don't get skin irritation.
Yeah.
That's probably a little better because you have a peak during the day and then you have your normal nadir trough levels while you're sleeping. And it doesn't seem to at least have the same conversion to DHT. I would still check the blood work on that to see. And there's also going to be variable absorption. But if you're trying to pick the best or least bad transdermal option, that's the case I would make.
Yeah. It's a little bit of an esoteric exercise, which I guess what that means is it doesn't really matter from a clinical standpoint because there's probably people who have already commented, why not just do subcutaneous injections or the XYOSTED auto-injector? And that's fair. There's certainly less risk of transference, more stable absorption, less risk of exterior skin irritation, but there's no downsides. And even with an auto-injector, some people still have debilitating needle phobias.
Yeah, injections aren't for everybody. That's probably the biggest pro as far as the transdermal formulations, stable levels, no injections, more DHT. You could call that a pro in some scenarios. I mean, maybe if you are treating someone for quality of life, they're on vacation and they want to boost up their DHT a little bit.
Genetic conditions, very young individuals. I would make a case that in pediatric endocrinology, very androgenic regimen should be used for undervirilized individuals as early in life as possible as well. But to stay on more of just the basics, people are asking, okay, so for the average person, we understand everything's individualized and we understand that a expert will always say it depends. But for the average person, say they have average metabolism, average sensitivity, what should they be besides high enough to where their friends, do you want your friends to know that you're on TRT or not on TRT?
Let's pull up slide 3 and we can kind of answer that question. So this is like, what is optimal? Where should you be? This is what you are going to be comparing with your friends, not I take this many milligrams, he takes this many milligrams, so he's on more than me. Let's see what the labs look like.
Yeah, exactly. So over off to the left, you see, so this is grayed out to the left. So if this is a natural testosterone level, if you have something between 0 and 10, that's an issue. Either you have severe insulin resistance or you're a fake natty and this is actually not a natural testosterone level. If it is between 0 and 10, and SHBG is just the protein that binds up all androgens like testosterone.
Wait a second.
So,
wasn't Dana White's SHBG between 0 and 10?
Yeah.
Anyway, SHBG binds up testosterone and DHT.
Yep. And a low SHBG, a lot of people are taking SARMs. So I suppose he could have been on SARMs probably unknowingly from all the biohacking advice that he got. But if you have a low SHBG, obviously address the insulin resistance or the fake natty status or the rare genetic polymorphisms. And you're just not going to tolerate as much total androgen or total testosterone because your free androgens are higher. And you can synthesize a whole bunch of testosterone in your gonads or inject a whole bunch. And if your SHBG is 12, then it's actually really hard to get your total T over 1,000.
Yeah, you're going to sort of burn through it, metabolize it much quicker. And if you're on the opposite end of the spectrum, if you have a lot of sex hormone binding globulin sort of carrying this testosterone around and not letting go of it, it's a little bit more complicated than that, but we'll keep it at that level, then you're going to metabolize, burn through your testosterone quite slowly, and you may be taking a small milligram dose and have a quite high serum level. And your free testosterone will actually link to a calculator to do this yourself. So if you have your albumin, your total testosterone, and your sex hormone binding globulin, it's quite easy to figure out a ballpark range of where your free testosterone level is. Probably an error margin of maybe 10% on either side. Genetically, some sex hormone binding globulin is a little more sticky than others. So we'll link to that calculator so people can kind of see where they fall. And then there's a second layer of calculation that's involved in your androgen score. Which is a term we've sort of invented. I don't know that it's talked about other places.
There's an FAI or a free androgen index, but it ignores the influence of DHT. And in females, it ignores the influence of DHEA. So we've done the best we possibly can by looking at various sources of clinical literature. And on average, you multiply your much more androgenic DHT and much less androgenic DHEA, and then add them together. So if you have a DHEA of 100, then you get 1. If you have a testosterone of 500, you get 500. And if you have a DHT of 100, then you get 700. 700 plus 500 plus 1 is 1,201. And let's say you have an average SHBG of 30. You follow that 1,201 over to 30 to 40, and you see you are in the green, but just barely. So you're on the lower end of optimal testosterone. Yellow is still normal testosterone. So this is something that you wouldn't necessarily expect to optimize naturally if it was naturally and significantly improve your athletic performance or cognitive performance. That being said, if you are on HRT, in general, the higher the SHBG, the better, because you tend to hang on to things more and you can also treat to a higher level without the downsides of a high free androgen index and variability.
Yeah. And in post, we'll put a little X on the section there for that case study we just gave with those levels. Maybe even add those to the chart so people can follow along. I think that'd be useful.
Of note, I do have patients on subcutaneous testosterone. I believe one of them has an SHBG of 70 or so, 60 or 70, even while on subcutaneous testosterone, XYOSTED auto-injector. You can inject once a week. Some of those patients might be able to get in by injecting every 10 days if they have a really, really high SHBG. I have not had a patient like that yet. The least frequent, at least for normal purposes, is once a week. So that's a nice benefit of a higher SHBG.
Yeah, and now I think it's story time. So let's go ahead and pull up slide 6. This is literally just from the package insert. So if you were prescribed Androgel, you could probably go get your package insert that you got from the pharmacy and read the same thing as me here. If not, you can just Google Androgel package insert, and this is all there to read. So if you know you have a question for your doctor that's like, well, what about the transference? What if I shower afterwards? If I wash my hands, how does that affect things? Actually, the answers to all those questions are in the package insert. It would probably be a little bit boring for us to read through all of those, but I found this portion to be kind of entertaining. This says a study was conducted to evaluate for potential for testosterone transfer. Males dosed with Androgel, applied to the abdomen for 7 days. 2 hours after application, the female subject rubbed their abdomens for 15 minutes. The males had covered the application area with a t-shirt. So imagine they were wearing a t-shirt and just having their bellies rubbed by females. Then they measured the testosterone levels in the females, and the levels went up between 40 and 60%. So take an average, say 25 nanogram per deciliter in female. It's going up to 50, maybe a little bit higher than that. So it's like a test boost, but you wouldn't want to intentionally expose a female to that over a long period of time. And then I found it kind of striking looking at the 1% package insert. They make the claim that when a shirt covered the application site, the transfer of testosterone from males to females was completely prevented.
That extra 0.62% really made the difference, didn't it?
I don't buy it. I think that regardless of what percent you're using, you do need to be mindful of the transfer. You know, this is something where, you know, the world's top doctors and scientists that developed Androgel probably should have like read between the lines here and said, oh, like if our higher potency is transferring, this one's probably transferring. And then the other claim, this is also, I believe, from the 1% package insert, is that the mean steady state DHT to T ratio remained within the normal limits. So the bold and the question mark, that emphasis there is mine. That is not in the package insert. Ranged all the way up to basically that 0.33. That's like a 1-to-3 ratio. So if your total testosterone is 900, your DHT could be 300 nanogram per deciliter, which is
good
magnitudes higher than most DHT levels.
The more DHT, the better. I've never seen someone harmed from too much DHT.
That's true. I couldn't name a single instance of someone being harmed by too many androgens, not even a single bodybuilder.
Yeah. And
the sarcasm detector is going off.
Speaking of being harmed from too many androgens, I believe we have another case report that we could go over. This one is from an Australian journal, and
Slide 9.
Yeah, it talks about a 7-month-old girl who was unfortunately exposed. Her father was applying a compounded testosterone product, 15%. So pretty high, definitely higher than 1%. And, you know, he covered his shirt, or he covered his arms with a shirt and whatnot. And she was Tanner stage 3, which basically means she was going through puberty to some degree in some sort of way. But later on in this paper, it noted that there was a study of compounded testosterone creams in Canada, and only half of them had the amount of testosterone in them within 20%. So two of the 20 were well over the 20%. And then I suppose it would be 8 of the 20 were far under the 20%.
Yeah. So if you have let's say a 10% cream, a couple of them were above 12% concentration. Most of them were below 8% concentration. Well, actually, most of them were within 20%, but a majority of the ones that were out of the range were below 8%.
Yeah. So looks like 2 of the 10. Yeah.
That does go into the variability. And
5 of 10 were within 80 to 120%. 3 of 10 were under 80%, and 2 of 10 were over 120%. Yeah. So it's all over the place.
And the other interesting thing here from your case report is that they did an analysis of the gel he was applying and found that it also contained DHEA and progesterone. And a lot of compounding pharmacies compound multiple different creams, DHEA cream, testosterone, progesterone cream. And I would suppose that they just weren't cleaning the equipment properly between batches, which is unfortunate. But whenever you have something bad like this that happens, there's an investigation, and then you sort of see, oh, like this is what was going wrong. And then this is sort of like a bonus finding, because I doubt that they expected to find progesterone in a testosterone cream.
Yeah, that's true.
They did.
We had a patient once that wanted to send testosterone cream off for analysis. And it was very expensive. If I remember right, $1,500.
Yeah, I was thinking closer to $3,000, but either way, it was quite costly.
Yeah. Anyways, I think that mostly covers it for today. Again, please leave comments that is, you know, beyond the basics, anything that you might be interested in. Also, please note if any of this was at, you know, too much of a level to be at the basics, but we appreciate everyone's time listening. Yeah, as always, thank you for your time, and may God bless you with health and happiness.
Save big on all your Halloween needs, all in the Kroger app. Get juicy red, green, or black seedless grapes for 99 cents a pound. Then get tender USDA Choice Boneless Beef Chuck Roast for $4.99 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.